Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. If you're listening via our new Radio Plus iPhone app, did you know you have Bloomberg Radio's complete program guide at the touch of a finger? Just slide your screen to the right and look for the green schedule icon. If you don't have the Radio Plus iPhone app yet, you'll want to download it. It's free via the iTunes App Store.
Donald Strassheim joins us from ISI, on this most important day. Don, good morning.
Tom, good morning.
Why did China cut interest rates?
Because the economy is slowing. 6 months ago, the risk in China was inflation is too hot. Now the risk is growth is too low. So they have adopted a stance to start to ease fiscal policy and monetary policy, and the rate cut came out just about 1 hour ago.
Don, very critically in our last conversation, there's the benchmark of 7.5%. You were enthusiastic about above 8% with a tendency downward. Where is your call right now? Could they breach 7.5%?
In terms of real growth, we're thinking 7.4%. That's a number we've actually been using now for a couple of months. Quite frankly, the tenths of a percent is just to show that we have a sense of humor about these things. Nobody knows precisely, but what we do, what most everybody's convinced about is that China is being infected by the weakness in Europe and elsewhere. Their growth rate's going to be slower. We can argue about how much slower it is, but it's coming down, and that's why they're acting right now. I don't think, by the way, that there's a big downside risk, a hard landing risk, because they have the fiscal policy and the monetary policy maneuvering room to ease, to stimulate. We don't. We're broke. We've got zero interest rates and a massive structural budget deficit. Europe's broke. Japan's broke. China is not.
Within the convention of economics, C plus I plus G plus net exports, what is distinctive about China given our global slowdown? Which of those do you focus on? Which is most dynamic? And which of those can they manage best?
Well, Tom, you just asked me about four questions there.
Thank you. It's four question June.
Let me do the best I can. The one I think that's going to be the strongest over the next few years is going to be consumer spending. It's been very weak. The Chinese, quite frankly, haven't treated their consumers as well as they might have. There's a lot of people there that are becoming much wealthier, making very nice real income gains year after year, and they're just like you and I. They want to work, earn, and consume. That'll be the strength. The weakest area will be trade. And as you know, China has basically flattened out its currency since about October of last year because, like the summer of 2008, they see the global storm brewing. And so they figure our exports are going to go down because global markets are going to be weaker. Why make it worse by letting the currency keep appreciating? They flatten it out, and that'll be the weak sector. And investment spending will be somewhere in between, not quite as large a share as it has been in the past, but it will not completely evaporate because there is a lot of investment spending that still can be done in China that will be quite profitable and useful for long-term economic growth.
Well, Don, as you pointed out a couple of minutes ago, we're broke, Europe's broke. Can China operate in sort of a vacuum?
Well, they'll try, but the answer is no. So we think there's going to be a soft landing as opposed to a hard landing in China, and we define that as a growth of, say, in China, 5% or more would be a soft landing. But you could surely define for me a scenario in America and in Europe and in Japan in which I would say, okay, Ken, I give under this dire forecast you've just outlined that China will likely have a hard landing. They came through the 2008-2009 crisis better than any other country in the world, and I think they will this time too, but they don't operate in a vacuum. You're quite right about that.
Don, your notes are known for immense and profound detail on the Chinese economy. This one really fascinates me. Online retail sales are on a tear, up 53% in 1 year. Let me ask a dumb question. Does Amazon work in China?
No, but there are similar there are similar services. You know, Twitter. There's no Twitter in China. There's no Facebook. It's those are blocked. China cares deeply about controlling its media and the information that the people get. We in the West don't really like that, but it's their country, and they can do it the way they want. The most important part, I think, Tom, about the online sales is 5 years ago. The Chinese people were afraid to give their credit card number to some anonymous person on the other end of a telephone line, or to type it into a website, because who knows who's going to get it and what they're going to do. But they are much more confident of that now. And so that's really what's driving the online sales.
Let's cut to the chase, Don. There's Don, folks, if you're just joining us for this entire half hour, Donald Strazheim joins us from ISI Group. Don, all the commodity charts look the same. Copper looks the same as the CRB. There's a commodity rollover. From where you sit on the China watch, is it a commodity bear market, or is it a consolidation, a correction, as China gets its act together?
It is in the near term a correction, but longer term, commodity demand is not going to rise nearly as rapidly in China as it has in the past. And I speak about all the hard commodities, whether you're talking about iron ore, copper, lead, nickel, zinc, tin, you name it. They'll have variances between one from another, but all the same. Because China's growth rate is slowing from something like 10% average the last three decades to something that's going to approximate 6% in the next few years. If growth grows from 10 to 6, what do you think is going to happen to steel, which has been growing at 16% a year for the last decade? It's going to go down. So 10 is to 6 as 16 is to 9.6. You know, Ken is doing that arithmetic in his head while you're listening.
Right.
And everyone is going to go down at least slow similarly. And with a cycle here, it's going to be even weaker in the next couple of years.
Okay, so this rate cut to China, now this is not necessarily a bonanza for the likes of Australia.
Well, it's not a bonanza, no, but it is. There's two things I think that are important about it, both of which are positive. One is, it is an easing move. They're cutting both the lending rate from 6.56 to 6.31. And that's a floor rate, and they're cutting the deposit rate from 350 to 325. Those are ceilings in China's system. So one, it's an easing. Two, they're giving more discretion to the banks to to move what they actually charge or pay farther away from the benchmark. That's a pro-market move, and those of us who believe in markets, I think, will be more impressed by that change than by the fact that they're just easing. You know, they ease, they tighten, all countries do. But this is a pro-market move. That's very positive.
Donald, what is the makeup of the Chinese central bank? We asked this question yesterday. We know of governors and presidents and a chairman in the United States. The British have their way. The ECB is much more centralized. What does the Chinese central bank actually look like?
Well, it is, Tom, it's really, no pun intended, quite central. And what I mean by that is it is not an independent agency that operates on its own out of the reach of the political sphere and all of the rest of the leadership.
So that means it's more independent than the United States.
Well,
I'm kidding, folks.
Yeah, I know. We could argue about that. But in any case, there is nothing that happens that is important in China economic policy, monetary or otherwise, that is not really blessed from, as they say, the highest levels. They're not independent, and so when the Standing Committee, the Politburo, for example, the State Council, the broadest bodies in the party and in the government, PBOC dances to their tune. Now the PBOC head, Joe Shashwan, is a quite well-respected, internationally well-respected guy, and I don't mean to denigrate him in any way. He has a well-deserved good reputation, but we just need to understand that all policy in China ultimately is driven from the top.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it has been, and it's the way it's going to be.
So when you look at a report from China, we were talking earlier, okay, 10% growth, maybe more like 6% in the future, but do you have to take a few grains of salt with those numbers that come out of the Chinese government?
Well, sure you do. And the incoming, I have to find this quote, but the incoming president was quoted at some seminar, some forum panel or whatever here 6 months or a year ago, talking about the GDP numbers, and he said, you know, words to the effect of, well, you know, they make them up. And so there's good data and there's bad data in China. We can mm-hmm. talk about which is which, but I would say that the PBOC data we think is really quite good.
Really?
Yeah. Through the banking system.
Right.
And there's also a series of rumors that circulate through Wall Street once a month, in which about 10 or 15 or 20 days through the month, there's this story that appears in a popular newspaper in China that says lending for the first 12 days was, you know, down 47% and the economy is going in the tank. Well, we watch the PBOC carefully, 24/7. PBOC puts out no partial month data. I don't know where these guys, somebody's making these stories up, but the PBOC is a pretty good agency.
Don, as a voice on China with decades of experience, let me ask a question that so many of our listeners ask. And within the geometry of June, do the jobs go to China still? Are American jobs being lost to China in 2012?
Well, yes, American jobs are still being lost to China, but China is also losing jobs to America. And there is becoming an increasingly interesting debate about who's going to be the net winner on this in the next few years. And on that, I think it's still quite open. The foreign direct investment data, that is plants on the ground, is one of my favorite indicators because it's basically people voting with their money. And it's not just portfolio flows. It's precisely, it's on the ground, a real investment. And over the last 20 years, China has been the winner with more foreign flows going into China than China going out of China to elsewhere. 20 years in a row, big FDI inflows year after year after year. America's been up and down year after year after year. And Japan, not surprisingly, has been flows out. Because more Japanese people find better opportunities overseas than mm-hmm. overseas people find in Japan. So we're still losing jobs to China in some areas, but we're gaining jobs, better jobs, higher paying jobs, and that's where the real struggle is going to be in the coming years.
Donald Strassheim, thank you so much.
Listen to Bloomberg Surveillance weekday mornings at 7 Eastern on Bloomberg 1130 in New York, or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113, copyright 2012.